This broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
For joining us, I'm Diane Rehm. Mother-in-law jokes date back at least to Roman times. In this hour, psychologist Terry Apter takes a new look at the age-old problem of dealing with in-laws. She's written 8 books on family dynamics, focusing on relationships between sisters, mothers, and daughters, parents and teenagers. Her new book explores the intricacy, friction, and love in the bonds between in-laws. The title is, What Do You Want From Me? Terry Apter joins me in the studio, and I look forward to hearing from you. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Good morning, Terry. It's good to see you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. You know, I think the main failing, if there is one, is that when people marry, they don't realize they're not marrying one person. They're marrying an entire family.
That is indeed a crucial problem. People believe that they can form a couple, that they'll be their very own brand new family, that they'll be the greatest influence on their spouse, that they'll be able to set their own rules. And it's only gradually that young couples discover that that isn't how it is, that the spouse's parents have an increasing, or let's say an enduring, influence on a variety of things. It may be how the husband expects you to behave. It may be that he feels that he has to enact a lot of loyalty to his parents and that he expects you to help him. He may also think that he needs someone to help him create a certain distance between him and his family, and he may expect you to help him. He didn't express this openly at the time, but it gradually becomes clear that that's what he hopes you'll do for him, and that can be very difficult.
It's interesting because throughout that presentation, you used he.
Yes.
Now, is it more difficult for he's to separate than she's?
Well, this is what's so interesting. The common assumption is that men are much better at drawing boundaries between themselves and others, and it's women who have remained connected. Yes, women do remain connected, but they're much better at drawing boundaries within those connections. So daughters, when they're growing up, argue more with their parents, more verbal arguments between teenage girls and their parents than between teenage boys and their parents generally. And in these arguments, what a teenage girl is doing is saying, I'm different from you, I'm changing, I'm not the little girl you think I am. And she establishes her new emerging adult identity. And at the same time, she's reassuring her parents, I'm changing, but I'll still be connected to you. We have to update the relationship. So by the time she gets married, she has a relationship with her parents whereby they know that she has boundaries, she's different from them, she's different from what they expect her to be. But on the other hand, they also feel reassured that the relationship will continue. Mm. When you get to a grown man and his mother, he tends not to have done that work. and he's more likely to let her think that he is still her little boy. He'll also very likely to be very, very protective of his mother.
I have the feeling that there you may be talking about only children or only sons.
It's certainly a problem that is more prevalent with only children or only sons. In that respect, the son may feel that his mother requires a special commitment from him. And it's not only that he has to show her love and that he has to show her respect and that he has to reassure her that they still have a close bond. It's also sometimes that he cannot tolerate, he feels very disloyal if he criticizes her in any way or if he says, I can't accept this kind of behavior from you. And of course, that will be infuriating to his spouse because she will say, you know, you're my partner, you're supposed to be on my side, but you are saying your mother's feelings matter more, your mother's needs matter more, you're asking me to accommodate those, and you're not standing up for me.
Terry Apter, and her new book is called What Do You Want From Me? Subtitled, Learning to Get Along with In-Laws. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. I was fascinated with the end of the first paragraph to your introduction here. You say that you're quoting yourself.
Yes.
You say, I failed to measure the impact my in-laws would have on my marriage, my personal life, and my well-being.
Yes, that's right. I did. I thought that I was going to be the main woman in my grown-up family, that I would be the one to be able to say to my husband, these are the roles that I'd like to play. This is what I think a good wife, a good mother should be. And this is what I want you to respect. And to a large extent, of course, that was accepted. Certainly on the conscious level, that was accepted. But on the other hand, there were expectations that he had formed from the way his mother was a good wife and a good mother. And he would naturally project those on to me, or they became expectations that I had to deal with. I also found that I had to deal with her assumption that his career, of course, mattered much more, he being not only male, or not primarily because he was male, but because he was her son.
Of course.
That somehow his successes were much more important than mine, and that the family as a whole should act and respect those in that way.
Did the marriage last?
The marriage has lasted,
I'm glad
yes.
to hear that.
The marriage has lasted. And I think in terms of this, the key is that he was able to convey to his mother, I am part of a couple. And, you know, my wife is an extremely important part of my life. And I like her. I respect her. And if you want to continue the relationship with me, and I want it to continue, then you have to accept that that I am bound to her and that she is different from you, and you're going to have to learn to accept that this is okay.
How long did that take before that kind of clear statement came?
I wouldn't say that you could ever say it was 100% successful. I think I had to learn to be tolerant. I had to learn that there were certain things that weren't going to change. I mean, for example, when, you know, when I had known her for, you know, 15 years, she said to me, Terry, there's something I really admire about you. And I said, oh, well, thank you. And I thought she was really making an effort to get to know me, to show appreciation
after
for
15
who,
years.
After 15 years. And when I asked her, you know, encouraged her to explain what it was she admired about me, she said that it was, I was very good at ironing my husband's shirts. So the only way that she could express real appreciation for me and for what I had achieved was for what I was able to do for him. And I had to accept that,
yeah.
You know, that we just had very different value systems. And that wasn't a personal insult.
You talk to a great many people,
yes,
in doing this book. People not only here in this country, but in other parts of the world. Were the stories that you heard somehow similar?
Well, they were similar, and this was surprising when I discovered it. I discovered that even in countries where there was an expectation that the mother-in-law would remain part of your family, that actually the wife became part of the husband's family, even with that expectation, there was still a lot of tension between them. And when people read about my research in India, they said, oh my goodness, we knew that mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationships were very difficult and fraught here. We didn't realize it was also a problem in the Western world. But when you think of what issues underlie those conflicts, I mean, the issues are about closeness and connection. How, you know, what do I have to give up of this precious relationship when my child marries? How will accepting an in-law into the family change my status in the family? And so when you think of those very deep issues, it's not surprising that they are cross-cultural.
Terry Apter, her new book, Learning to Get Along with In-Laws, titled, What Do You Want From Me?
Good morning. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show on WAMU 88.5. Coming up next at 11, it's a Prairie Home Companion with the first in the Summertime series of compilation shows.
Hi, it's Diane Rehm inviting you to take part in an online chat this Wednesday afternoon at 1. We'll talk about the news of the day. I'll take your questions. Go to conversation.wamu.org. Become part of our growing community of public radio fans.
Coming up Monday on the Kojo Namdi Show, the surprisingly short and tarnished history of Supreme Court nominee hearings, plus the unknown future of American foreign aid. Proponents say our programs are fixable and effective. Critics call them fractured and failing. The Kojo Namdi Show, noon till 2 Monday on WAMU 88.5.
This broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
Welcome back. Psychologist Terry Apter is with me. She's done a new book on the relationships between in-laws. She's not only talking about the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, son-in-law relationship and all the jokes that have come through the centuries about that mother-in-law. But what happens between sisters-in-law, brothers-in-law, the whole family gamut? And as she said earlier, you do marry into an entire family. You may expect that you and your new spouse are going to create your own life. Very nicely separated, very carefully molded, but there are always these outside influences. Terry Apter, talk about the title. What do you want from me?
Well, what do you want from me could be spoken by almost any in-law. The mother-in-law may try to make friends with the daughter-in-law she often describes herself as expecting or hoping for a friendship and then finding that's rebuffed. She may find that her daughter-in-law seems to be critical of her or supposes that she is critical of her daughter-in-law when she's just meaning to be helpful. And so she often says, well, what do you want from me? You know, no one else finds me so difficult. Why do you? What do you want from me? A daughter-in-law may feel that the mother-in-law is assessing her primarily insofar as she's a good helpmate to her husband. And she may want to forge her own life. She, of course, values her own career, her own interests, and may be just confused by a mother-in-law who seems to be asking more from her, pushing her into shape. And so she may say, what do you want from me? And the husband, who is also a son, may say to his wife, you know, why are you complaining about my mother? That's just how she is. It's no big thing. You should accept it. What do you want from me when you complain about my mother and say I'm not supporting you enough?
It's interesting that there, your reporting seems to indicate there's far less tension between a mother-in-law and a son-in-law, or a father-in-law and his son-in-law.
Yes. At least, you know, 75% of the people who had problems with in-laws said that the tension was between the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. Now, part of that is because with all the change there's been in women's roles outside the home, within the home, women still feel heavily invested. You know, they feel that their sense of self-worth is invested in their roles as wife, as mother, as someone who keeps the family running smoothly, keeps the family together, is the kinkeeper. And the mother-in-law may expect that she will be the authority in her own family. And her views on how things are done may differ greatly from the way her daughter-in-law sees them. And these different views may seem like a competition. So questions about housework, childcare become competitions about who cares more, who's indeed who does it better, and who's a better woman.
I thought it was fascinating that one European country passed legislation,
yes,
to defend the boundaries between in-laws and a married couple.
Yes, that was in Italy, and there was a huge increase in the divorce rate between 2000 and 2005. And the government asked researchers to look into that. What were the problems? Why was this such an issue? What were the issues leading to divorce? And of course, they found that immaturity was one issue, financial problems were one issue, but repeatedly what kept coming up was problems with the mother-in-law, the husband's mother. What they also found was that the chances that the marriage would last went up for every 100 yards that were placed between the young couple and the husband's mother.
Interesting.
And
Are you suggesting that in Italy many times they live close by?
They do. They tend to live close by. And that proximity can make it much easier for the mother-in-law to forget that, given her son has married, her relationship with her son has to change somewhat. It was in response to research like that that in Italy, there was a law passed saying that grounds for divorce could be the husband's failure to keep his mother from interfering in the marriage.
Boy, that is really profound.
It is. And I mean, it shows that even in a culture where you expect an extended family type, and that's part of the norm, it doesn't mean it's not problematic.
And that closeness of family among Italian families, you would think, we have this image of everybody having a great relationship and a great good time because they are all so closely knit.
Oh, yes. And I think that there is a lot to be said for the extended family. As a matter of fact, one of the positive things about my research on in-laws was that it highlights how important family bonds remain. And there's a lot about how the family is in decline. But it's only in decline if you measure divorce rate, the breakup of couples. If you look at relationships, if you look at the family as a vertical relationship between parent, child, and grandchild, you find that that is as strong as it ever was, and in many ways is increasing because more midlife people are looking after elderly parents, more grandparents are looking after grandchildren and helping out their children in their adult children in that way. So, the problems arise within this very positive context that family relationships remain important.
You also talk about financial arrangements and what you ought to think about before you enter into a financial arrangement with in-laws. What are you talking about there?
Well, a lot of people say that, you can separate business aspects from personal aspects, but within a family, you certainly cannot do that. And money, or the exchange of money, has a great deal of emotional meaning in any context, but it's not only always clear what that meaning is. And sometimes people will offer financial help to a couple or actually to an in-law. And within their own families, they may have a clear grasp on what the expectations are for the return of such, what kind of appreciation you're supposed to have, what follows on from that kind of financial help. But the in-law may have no inkling about what these rules are. So it can get very complicated. Sometimes parents, an older generation, will offer a gift, what seems to be a gift, no strings, but it turns out there are strings. So my advice is to think very carefully to make it clear, is this a loan, is this an investment, or is this a gift? And hopefully everyone beforehand will be clear on that, because it's very upsetting when the meaning of what was given changes after the fact, when suddenly a gift becomes a loan.
Well, it strikes me that this is an area that people do not talk about before they marry. That is relationships with respective parents and what the expectations might be of the interaction between one spouse and the family, or the other spouse and the family, or the two coming together. Because You, in a sense, you're bringing two separate cultures together.
Yes, but you don't realize that at the time. You also don't realize how different your family may be from the family you're joining. The way your family functions seems normal. You may think it's universal. You may not notice all the little rules and the quirks and the strategies that each family has for controlling behavior, for punishing misbehavior. And so you don't mean to be hiding anything from the person you're marrying. You think it's all there, but it takes perhaps many years for that to emerge. And also, you don't know how rigid one family is. Sometimes families overlapping are very quick to learn each other's personal language and adapt and respond. But sometimes they're very rigid and very punitive if you don't change.
Here's an email from J.S., who says, for 7 years, I have had mother-in-law issues, but most recently I've gained a sister-in-law, and she and I have an even harder time connecting. I've expressed an interest in having a relationship on two occasions, but she remains painfully silent. We never interact, except for the few times we see each other at family gatherings, which includes a stiff hello and a disingenuous hug. If I don't respond, then it seems I'm trying to cause problems. I am a problem solver and love to keep harmony through discussing issues, while the family loves to dance with pink elephants. Aside from the mother-in-law, how in the world do I get along with my sister-in-law?
Well, this is an interesting question. She's a problem solver. And one important thing in solving a problem is trying to define it. Now, she currently is seeing it as only between her and her sister-in-law. But every relationship with an in-law is triangular at least. And what are the possibilities that she might explore? Well, it isn't only a mother who may be possessive of a son, it's also a sister who may be possessive of a brother. Is the sister-in-law concerned that she no longer has the influence she'd like to have with her brother? She no longer has the special relationship with her brother. So in that case, the sister-in-law may be resenting her brother's wife for things that the brother's wife can't do anything about. I mean, she has she has married her sister-in-law's brother, and that is a primary close relationship. And if her sister-in-law resents that, then what can she do? Well, it isn't enough just to be nice to her. What she has to also try to do is to see whether she can reassure her sister-in-law that she values her, that she's learned to value her through her husband. We don't know, but I mean, this is something to think about. Might this make sense here? If the sister-in-law feels that she can still be a part of her brother's life and that she still has something special in her brother's life, then that may warm her up. But it may be that she's just asking for too much, that she wants to be the only close woman.
That is a very different situation. At 25 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's go to Joe in Louisville, Kentucky. Hi there, Joe. You're on the air.
Yes, great show. I have made a lot of bad decisions in my life, but one good decision that I've made is to marry someone and to marry into a family. I actually like these people, and they seem to like me. And unfortunately, it's my wife who ended up with the rotten in-laws. And I'd say particularly my father, and, perhaps it's complicated by, divorce because my wife gets along quite well with, my mother, or well enough, it seems. My parents have been divorced for 10 years, so.
So, Joe, tell me what the problem is between your wife and your father.
Well, my wife is, she's from the modern age, and my father's from the stone age, I think he expects, and he has problems with both of his daughter-in-laws, my brother's wife as well, he didn't even have his own daughters. He just expects his daughter-in-laws to be these sort of like Victorian brides, I don't know if I'm explaining myself.
No, this is very clear, yes. Is your wife very upset by this, or are you the one who's upset by this?
I think both of the sister-in-laws, I mean, I won't speak for my sister-in-law, but I do know very well that my wife is...
bothered.
Yeah. Okay, but does she have any reason to feel threatened by it? I mean, does she... So he has expectations that, you know, your wife will be, I assume, you know, the caring woman in his family, that what, she'll look after him or she'll look after you in a certain way?
Well, it's... Well, you know, I'm at a point now where I'm actually not even really speaking to him. I'm sending him cards.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
That's tough.
Well, at least she has your support. It would be, I assume, everyone would feel sort of more whole, more at ease, if you could find a way of having a relationship with him in which these, I guess, insulting, demeaning expectations could be curbed, and I suppose that it would be good to look for a way to do that.
And perhaps simply to come to realize that it can't be healed is a way to move on. Terry Apter, her book is titled, What Do You Want From Me? Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy, by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, presenting an in-depth look at the digital generation at edutopia.org, and by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary on the web at healthreform.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up Monday on the Kojo Namdi Show, Barack Obama makes his first trip to Africa as President of the United States, and we explore the future of American foreign aid. Washington gives more than $20 billion to poor countries every year, but critics say our system is failing, getting more bang for our development bucks. The Kojo Namdi Show, noon till 2 Monday on WAMU 88.5.
Listening to WAMU 88.5 is on your list of things to do today. So consider doing more than just listening by supporting the programs that mean so much to you. Call us anytime at 800-248-8850 or visit WAMU.org and click on support to make your membership contribution. Put supporting WAMU 88.5 on the top of your list of things to do today. Thank you for your support. This broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is recorded, so we're not taking any new phone calls.
Welcome back, and we're taking questions, comments for Terry Apter. She's written several books on relationships. She is a writer, a psychologist, a fellow of Newnham College at Cambridge University. Her newest book is titled, What Do You Want From Me? Learning to Get Along with In-Laws. Let's go now to Michael in Waldorf, Maryland. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Terry. I have a wife that is, she's the only daughter, but her mother controls everything she does, and this is really causing a big stress in my home right now. There is nothing my wife who... All decisions is our mother's, and I can't just stand that again. My marriage is going to be 3 years this July ending, but this is really causing a big havoc right now.
And I wonder, hearing your voice, Michael, can you tell me where you come from? Where does your wife come from?
I am from Nigeria, and my wife is from here.
Aha, I see.
Well, this is a very common problem that a mother seems to have great influence on her daughter, even though her daughter is also a wife. Someone who is part of a marriage wants a mutuality, wants to be able to think that we together will discuss things, we together will make decisions, that we can influence each other. And having a very strong figure from the older generation is very interfering in that. I think the problem that you have is pretty much with your wife. And I guess one of the things you could do is reassure her that she could resist her mother's influence without being disloyal to her. She can still, express love, have connection, show respect, but that you will support her if she makes her own decisions, and that, assure her that she is still a good daughter, even though she can say to her mother, we must respect these boundaries.
Michael, I think the point you are hearing is to get that communication going. Talk with your wife and perhaps ease some of your own concerns in the process about what's happening. These cross-cultural issues are fascinating, Terry. Here's an email from Kelly from Dallas, who says, I'm of Anglo-Irish descent, but my wife's family is Chinese. My experience is that in Asian cultures, the wife's mother is far more, shall we say, engaged in her daughter's family than the mothers-in-law you've been discussing. However, we've just heard from someone whose mother is very involved. He says, I laughed out loud when I read Amy Tan's Joy Luck Club because it rang so true. When my mother-in-law read it, she remarked with some sadness, I just realized I'm a stereotype. Do you have experience with Asian family dynamics?
Well, yes, I do. And the cross-cultural glitches that have been so beautifully described there are actually just examples of many differences of expectations that you can get when any two families overlap. In Chinese families today, often the husband's mother believes that she expects that she will have a lot of status in the family as a mother-in-law because she believes her son's wife will be subservient to her. And many Chinese women are expressing dismay at how independent their daughters-in-law are. Now, the involvement of a woman's mother in the marriage, that can be very helpful, but of course it can be intrusive, as we've heard. A lot of it is a spouse helping his wife say, I need to talk to you directly. I need to feel that you are responding to my needs, and I want to know what you're thinking. I want to have your views directly. I don't want them filtered through someone else. Mm. I think cultural differences can make that more entrenched, but it's not an entirely different issue from that can arise between any families.
Let's go to Chevy Chase, Maryland. Good morning, Jennifer. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Surely.
I feel like your show fits in so perfectly with my relationship with my mother-in-law. She sort of has no concept of boundaries. Like, for example, she rearranged our house while we were away once. And she also tends to act like a mother to my children instead of a grandmother, and sort of not taking our opinions into account, doing things the way that she thinks they need to be done, and just taking charge of every situation she's in, to the point where I've been experiencing panic attacks. And now that we've moved away from them, they've gone away. But I still get anxious interacting with her. So I just need advice on how to move on from here.
Well, what you've described is a very, very difficult problem. I'm sorry you've had it. I think that your panic attacks are indications that you simply do not know how to deal with this. Hmm. And the anxiety, I think, is you're thinking over and over again, how can I deal with this? What if she does this? Will I know? Will I have the strategies to deal with that?
Let me ask Jennifer a question. Have you had any help? Have you sought out any help? Have you talked with your husband about your feelings?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And he's gotten much better over the 4 years of our marriage in recognizing what an influence he has had over me and what a negative experience it's been. And I have been in therapy in and out. That has helped a great deal to realize my issues with her and my own, you know, being my own mother and that sort of thing. But,
I think what she's doing is actually she's trying to compete with you. I mean, she's trying to say, I'm really the mother in this family. Mm-hmm. And that it may mean that she needs reassurance that actually showing her that you do respect her, that you do acknowledge her status in the family will actually help her. It's much easier to say to someone, please respect these boundaries, if she also feels that her status in the family is secure and that there is an abiding connection.
But how do you make her, how do you help that mother-in-law feel that her status is secure when you perhaps rearrange that furniture so it's the way you want it?
I think you have to be pretty tough. I think you have to be pretty clear.
Which I'm a pretty meek person, so she sort of ran over me for 2 or 3 years there. So
yeah, I think your panic attacks are because you don't know how to. You know, you feel she will manipulate you, and finding a few strategies to say no to her would be very helpful and would help your state of health.
Jennifer, good luck to you. I do sympathize. Here is an email from Beth in Arlington, Virginia. She says, boy, I could use some help with the problem I'm having. My husband and I grew up, met and married in Georgia. We moved to D.C. in 2001. Our parents still live in Georgia. Every time we visit them, my husband's parents pressure us to move home to Georgia. The pressure has gotten worse each year. It's reached a fever pitch now that we have a child. There are long discussions, tears, and hurt feelings each visit. I want to stay in Washington. I love it here. My job is here. I worked hard to get it. My husband feels guilty, wants to move back to Georgia in a few years. I feel guilty, too. We have a wonderful family. I'd like to spend more time with him, but I don't want to move back to Georgia. Moreover, my in-laws do not seem willing to compromise with more frequent visits to see us in D.C. What do I do?
Well, that's the guilt that is making you vulnerable to their pressure, and I think they must know that. On some level, they sense that their behavior is working because it's making you feel very uneasy. It's making you feel uneasy about continuing with the life you both enjoy. So I think you have to work less on their behavior, less on convincing them that you don't need to move back, certainly less on how you're going to comply with their demands, and much more on addressing that guilt. They will work on that, and you know, you and your husband together can talk about this and say, you know, these are our priorities. We do visit them. We're part of their family, but our decisions about our careers and our well-being, they must come first. And let's hope that his parents will accept that.
I hope that helps, Beth. I know how difficult that can be. She really does have to have her husband standing by her in that statement to the family.
Yes. If they feel that the husband isn't saying it enough, then they'll keep working at it, and she'll be more and more exposed, and then the problems may well become a problem in the marriage.
All right, let's go to Marina in Kailua, Hawaii. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, Diane and Terry. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Surely.
And all of your shows. I just wanted to say that I appreciate so much the attention being given to this topic, but maybe one thing that hasn't been brought out so much is that sometimes there are true mental health issues,
yes. Yeah.
Really deep-seated mental health issues involved that go beyond anyone's ability in the family to solve, and outside help is needed. I came from a family with, my parents are divorced, there's a lot of dysfunction. I thought it was presented to me that I was marrying into a Midwestern farm family where it worked well, and I soon discovered this was not the case. My husband's mother, unfortunately, there's some genetic mental problems in the family that have been passed down through the family, and she has spent the 30 years of our marriage and all of his brother's marriages trying to destroy all of them, and has nearly succeeded. And when we were first married, she would send these rambling 10 or 20 page poison pen letters. And I finally put my foot down on that, and she found other ways, you know, sending
yeah,
packages.
Yeah, I think you're in a difficult position. I mean, this is an impossible position. And I said that, you know, we want to solve in-law conflict because they're part of a family, an extended family, and there are so many benefits. But often there are times when you have to say, this is too painful, this is too destructive, what I must do is control this relationship, actually move back. Sometimes it's necessary to cut off a relationship. It's the last, you know, the last resort, but it's sometimes necessary.
At 6 minutes before the hour, you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. You know, I think it's important to say here that there are many successful in-law relationships where people have learned to come together. Perhaps they started out tentatively, but then as they come to know and accept each other's qualities and differences,
yeah,
and to extol those differences rather than to reject them, it can make all the difference in the world.
It can indeed. You know, joining a new family, overlapping with a new family can extend and enrich your life. And often in-laws are greatly appreciated and do appreciate what you bring to their child's life.
Here's an email from MJ. She says, I've been married for 25 years, and until my mother-in-law died 2 years ago, I never had a peaceful week. I found myself the focus of a barrage of criticism, helpful advice, and more. Once my children were born, the barrage increased to even higher levels. I tried as best I could to speak with her, but it seemed to truly fall on deaf ears. My husband did not overtly intervene, though I suspect he spoke to her privately.
Well, that husband should have intervened very, very clearly, very firmly. But this is an example of a tragic story that sometimes is generated by in-law conflict, and it is something that we really should work to understand too often we make jokes about it, but it's deadly serious.
It is deadly serious, and as we've heard this morning, can make the difference between whether a marriage stays together yes. or whether a marriage falls apart.
It can indeed, yes. Feeling abandoned, feeling that your spouse is not on your side, that his parents' needs and wishes come first, is a terrible feeling.
Terry Apter. She is the author of 8 other books. This one's called What Do You Want From Me? Learning to Get Along with In-Laws. I think you've touched a nerve here, Terry. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure, and your callers have been wonderful.
Aren't they good?
Yes.
They're just great. I love them all. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy your day. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Andrew Chadwick. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. From the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And from the Wallace Foundation, where arts and education leaders can learn about how to bring the arts to more people. Downloads at the Knowledge Center at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Good morning. A Prairie Home Companion is coming up next on WAMU 88.5, followed by Car Talk at 1.
This I believe.
I believe in the human race. I believe in the warm heart. I believe in man's integrity. I believe in the goodness of a free society.
I'm Bob Edwards. Here, baseball.